I was like, this is silly. So I read over 250 books and decided that there's a better way to invest. And I bought my first property at age 21.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals. And we invite folks on to help us who have done it, people who have done it. And that's why I'm really excited. Chris Larson is here with us today. He is the founder and managing partner of Next Level Income. And that's the level that you want to be at, the next level. Chris has been investing in and managing real estate for over 20 years. He is passionate about helping investors become financially independent. And that's what we want to hear from you, Chris. Thank you so much. I'm so excited you're here with us today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here as well, Christine. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. So I can tell you from at 16 years old, I was reading the paper and I'm like, Dad, this three family is only like $16,000. Don't you think we should buy it? And he was like, get out of the paper. You're insane. You know? So what was your experience? Did you feel like you came out of the cradle loving real estate, or did it kind of evolve for you?
Yes, I think it's, you know, there's nature and nurture. And I think my father was an entrepreneur. He passed away when I was 5 years old.
Oh.
But he died. He actually died in a plane crash. He was a pilot, had his own plane. Gosh. And he went down in Lake Michigan.
My gosh.
So quite tragic, but I didn't get to know him. But I had, you know, I had his
DNA. Him.
And I'll never forget coming home from college and I had a Zig Ziglar book. And my mom looked at it and said, I remember your father reading that. She's like, you're so much like your father. So he was an entrepreneur. He was the first, and I think today, the only one from his family in Denmark, Wisconsin, this little town in Wisconsin, to leave and stay like, you know, gone at an early age. So he, you know, he just liked to explore. He had Harley Davidsons and six Corvettes because he restored Corvettes and a boat and an airplane and a business and all kinds of different stuff. So it's in my DNA. But when I was young, I was also a worker. Like I would, my first job, I took garbage out or picked up garbage from the garbage cans at our local beach, which, by the way, if you want to do something really gross, go to a beach at a, you know, like, and this wasn't like a resort beach, right? This is like, you know, just a middle-class beach on the Severn River. And it's July and it's hot and people throw dirty diapers and, you know, leftover meat in there, and go pick that up after about a week. And you will learn that that's not what you want to do for the rest of your life. Yeah. I had a paper route. I sold newspaper door to door, or I sold wrapping paper door to door. I did lawns and shoveled snow. So I was always entrepreneurial. Once I got to college, I was racing bicycles. So I started racing bicycles in an early age. And by the way, I tell this whole story in my books, which you can get for free, nextlevelincome.com. Click on the book link.
Awesome.
And I think you guys have that link, Christine, but it's nextlevelincome.com. And I'll even send you a copy. And I was racing my bike. Cyclists do not make much money at all. So I was like, all right, I got to figure out another way to make money. So I was always like, you know, I had like different side jobs and different things. Going into my junior year, you know, kind of linking the story with my father here, my best friend passed away, and I get back to school the next year. And I was like, this is silly. Like, you know, I'm riding my bike. This is not what I'm meant to do. So I quit racing my bike. I go back to school. Now I was training sometimes 30 hours a week. So say 15 to 20 hours a week, but sometimes 30 hours a week.
Wow.
I'm an engineer. I don't want to be an engineer. I'm in engineering school and I have all this energy, and I have a friend and he gave me a copy of Money Magazine. And this is probably 1999, may have been 98 when he gave it to me. Actually, 99 is when I quit racing. And it talked about this new entity called a Roth IRA. And it talked about compound interest. And if you could start investing when you're 18, I was like, well, I'm 19. I can do that. So I started investing. I started day trading. And, you know, after many, many nights not sleeping or waking up at 3 a.m., I was like, this is silly. So I read over 250 books and decided that there's a better way to invest. And I bought my first property at age 21. So I wasn't 16, but I saw my parents had a few rental properties and I thought, okay, there's something to this, figured it out. And now today we have, I think a little over 3,000 multifamily units, self-storage. We have some office. We do several different things now.
Wow. So you've lived through some of the people who I talk to who are like, you know, hot in real estate, they've never lived through the down cycle. So they're using these methods. And I'm like, These are all great methods when the market's going up. What is going to happen to you when the market starts going down? But you've lived through at least one big cycle. How did that, How was that for you?
Yes. I just, if you're watching, you just saw me lean down. And if you're in a hotel room, you open the drawer next to the bed and there's always a Bible in there, right? Well, my real estate Bible is this book, and it's about the same thickness. It's called The Secret Life of Real Estate and Banking. And I actually had a podcast that just launched today with DJ Van Curren, which we talked about this. So you can check that out. But first off, I did live through it. And the reason I gravitated towards this book is because my parents both were in the real estate business in the early 90s. And for anybody that has been in real estate that long, which I wasn't doing it, but I was in my early teenage years. And I think, let me pause for a second. When you go through loss in your life at a young age, it changes you. And you tend to think a little bit differently. So people over the years, people have said, why are you thinking about that then, Chris? Like, that's not normal. And I think not having my father around and, you know, just being in a slightly different role in the family, I probably thought about things a little bit differently. And I'll never forget when both my parents lost their job during the savings and loan crisis during the early 90s. So there was a downturn, much like the downturn we just went through with COVID. And it was basically a crisis. And what happens is you have these crises. I'm sorry, that was a recession. You know, you have these recessions every approximately 18 years. And then you have like these little panics in between these recessions. Like we had 9/11, then we had COVID. COVID happened after the last big recession. You know, if you go back, then you had 9/11. You go back before that, you had the savings and loan crisis. You go back before that, you know, you had the, the inflationary crisis, and you know, you look at all this stuff, and you can go back all the way in history to the 1800s when we started recording these things. So not only have I seen these downturns, but I've traced them back through history and I've studied this extensively. So you have to be aware of where you are in the cycle. You have to know that real estate does go in cycles. It's not linear. It's curvilinear, as us engineers like to say. And you have to understand that what may look to be bulletproof in the short term may be a strategy that you have to be careful with in the long term.
Yeah, obviously, if you're holding and you're in a good place and you put down a good, but I do a course called Real Estate Investing, Is It For You? And that's one of the things we do. Like if you have $100,000 in cash, you know, here's person A, they're going to buy 5 properties, and here's person B, they're going to buy 1 property. And how does that, you know, change for them when we get into a downturn? So
absolutely,
it's you're right. If you know where you are, you know what to do. Or if you have an idea, you know.
And look, I know you have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen here to the show, and you know, real estate and business are very similar. And there's 3 rules that we follow. 1, have appropriate leverage. So we're typically having 70 to 75% leverage on a property. 2, have appropriate debt. So you want to have long-term debt, or you want to have debt that is lined up to the length of your project. So you don't want to be over leveraged. And you don't want to have to be turning your debt over repeatedly, because that's unpredictable. And 3, make sure you have adequate reserves. So if you're reasonably leveraged, if you have good financing on your business or your property, and we have at least 6 months of reserves for each of our properties, if you have adequate cash reserves, you're going to protect yourself typically even during some of the worst cycles that we've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. This idea of just like, oh, we're just going to buy, you know, borrow 100% and wait for the value to, you know, wait for our equity to increase. Like, good luck with that. but you know, you could have been investing for 10, 15, 12, you know, 12, 10 to 12 years and use that, and it would work great. Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, bam, you think I'm good at this, right? I've been doing this for a decade.
Yeah. So, there's a great book called Anti-Fragile that's out there. And are you familiar with it? So, you know, Nassim Taleb, one of my favorite authors. Some of his stuff is really dense, and even I can't get through it. But his main book and his main books, he talks about like, don't blow up. You know, he talks about being a trader. But what he wants to convey is that you have to have a strategy that's durable during any point in the cycle. So if you're financing 100%, you know, that works great, but these are the people that get blown out and they're not around when the next cycle comes around. Those are the people that you see at cocktail parties bragging about this and that. I say our strategy, it's kind of like the Warren Buffett strategy. It's sexy like Warren Buffett, not super sexy, but right. You know what? It works repeatedly and we can repeat it over and over again. And you know why Warren Buffett's so successful? Because he's still around after, you know, he didn't become a billionaire until his 50s, you know? And then you keep that track record up for another 30 or 40 years. I mean, Charlie Munger's like 99 or something. I mean, right, I look at that guy. I'm like, is this guy from Tales from the Crypt? How old is this guy? but they're still sharp. They're still investing. And, you know, I'll tell you what, you keep that compound interest going, you know, another 40, 50 years, you're going to crush it.
Exactly. And they love it. That's another thing, right? I mean, they love it. They eat, drink, and sleep it, right? So that's another thing, right? You got to do your research. It's not this plug and play type of thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. So now you're successful. You've got thousands of rental properties, thousands of doors. So what's your life look like now? I mean, you can pay everybody to do everything. What do you do for fun? Are you writing a book? You've got a podcast. What's going on? Tell me your today's life.
Well, I appreciate that. It's funny because you kind of alluded to when you say next level, like there's always another level, right, Christine? So you're always looking up and you say, okay, what do you do? And so my big goal, you know, for a lot of years was a certain amount of passive income, being able to leave a W-2 job, having full control, you know, over everything. When you hit that point, you know, what happens and what I've seen is you turn more towards purpose. So, you know, this is why financial independence is so important to me. The only thing more important is health. So you have to be, you know, have an utmost focus on your health, because if you don't have that, you know, then what good is all the money in the world? So I think if you have enough money coming in that you don't have to go work for somebody else and do that, you can do what you love. And what I love to do is I love to convey the knowledge that I've accumulated over the past couple of decades and teach that to people. And what I say to my coaching clients is, look, like you can figure out what I did too, but if I don't want it to take 15 years, like I can give it to you in 15 days. So, you know, what I love to do, we wrote the book to, if you're watching, so we wrote the book to share not only my story, but also our methodology when it comes to a value add strategy. And the value add strategy in multifamily also applies to the self storage projects we do, the car wash projects that we do, the mobile home parks that we do. It's a very repeatable strategy. Obviously, it's a different operating strategy, but the same core strategy applies. Just like Warren Buffett has a value investing strategy that he applies to different market sectors. But the most important thing in my life right now is being a father to my children. So, you know, my father wasn't around. He didn't have that choice when he was young. So, tomorrow I'm going to take my son out mountain biking after school. He's got his first mountain bike race this weekend. So I'm going to take him and my younger son, to that, you know, but so when I'm not spending time with my kids, I'm working with investors, I'm putting deals together with my partners. I have a very small group of coaching clients I work with, and again, trying to help them shortcut the path to success. And then for fun, again, I love to spend time with my boys, but I still ride my bike. I race for over 20 years. I ride my bike. I love to be outside here in Asheville, North Carolina. Love good food. Love to cook, and I love to enjoy restaurants as well.
Fun. And you know, you're talking about the importance of health, but I feel that when you're not working for someone else, that health is easier, right? When you don't have to worry about the money so much, like, you know, people struggling to find time to exercise, they're under a lot of stress and pressure. It's like, you just gotta cut yourself loose, get to that next level where you've got some time and you can do your thing and ride bike and spend time with your kids. And you're not saying, I don't want to, you know, I have to do this and that and the other thing. I have to do exactly what I want to do today.
Yeah. And it is hard when you don't have to do anything. It is hard to figure out what the priorities are. And, you have to kind of think bigger. So if you're listening and you're like, well, yeah, that's great, Chris, but like, I'm not there. I have to go to work today. Here's what you do. You need to, number one, create a big vision. So create a vision for your life. Say, hey, what do I want my life to look like? I like 3 years. I think that's kind of like the Goldilocks, you know, time frame. People say 5 years. I mean, geez, 5 years, you can do anything in 5 years. 1 year, it's hard because like, I think people tend to overestimate what they think they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in five. So I choose three because your whole body, you can literally recreate your entire body in 3 years. So if you can recreate your entire body, why not your life, right? Why not change your life? Once you have that vision, you need to prioritize what you want to do. And when I quit racing my bike, and this is the second time, because I kind of started racing again later on in my career or my life, I say career, I guess it was kind of a racing career. But that's how I wrote my book from 5:30 in the morning till 7 o'clock in the morning. I would sit down and I'd write, and it didn't take that long. But focus on your number one priority. And I have on my blog, if you check out my website, I talk about how to create another 20, 30, 40 hours a week. And I got news for you. It's getting rid of the stuff that really doesn't matter. Like social media, like the news, cut cable out. You know, hey, if you're struggling to find time, maybe you shouldn't be watching, you know, sports 20 hours a week. You know, maybe you should be reading and educating yourself or getting a coach and doing those sorts of things. If it's your health, maybe that's what you should be doing. So once you hit those priorities, what I find is, especially with my coaching clients, success, it compounds and it snowballs. And the success that you have in one area of your life starts to roll into other areas. If you get complacent, that's where, you know, you have to sometimes refocus and figure that out and set your goals higher and, you know, challenge yourself again.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there are so many things I think that people do by default. They just like get home and plop themselves in front of the television and then they just get home or, you know, or just do something that without, right. And then they're exhausted because they're not exercising. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to get up at 4:30 every morning, but it feels good to get up early now. Like it's ridiculous. People think I'm an idiot or, you know, not everybody, but that I get up before the alarm now. I mean, I was consistently 7:30, right? I was so excited that I didn't have to get up till 7:30. I could get up. Oh, I could just lay in bed. Now my alarm goes up at 4:30 and I'm usually up at like 4:15, like without the alarm. I'm like, oh, you know, hey, it just feels really good.
I told my buddy, he was here this weekend with his wife and his two lovely little girls that grew up with my boys. They've moved around the country and it was Saturday. And I was like, man, I slept in today till like 7 because they came in the night before. We were up late, like after midnight, which is really late for me. And he's like, you slept in? I was like, yeah, we normally get up at 5, you know, like normal time on Saturday. And he's like, why? But yeah, you just get used to it. We got stuff to do. So yeah, it is when your life's in harmony, everything starts to work out. So if you're off balance, you have to start figuring out what's that one piece that you can start doing, something you can get excited about and really, you know, focus on first thing in the morning when your energy is high. Don't wait till the end of the day. You're saying, hey, I want to do this. I'm going to start working out. Hey, get up, put your gym clothes on, put your running shoes on. You know, I used to put my cycling clothes on in the morning. I'll tell you what, you look really silly walking around in spandex at 5 a.m. drinking your coffee if you're not riding your bike, you know, but if you wait till 4:30 or 5 when your energy is low and it's like, maybe I'll just have a drink today instead of going to the gym. So do it first thing in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a time in my life when I would sleep in my exercise clothes. I just didn't trust myself to like be able to get out of the door in time. But yeah, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, whatever you have to do, because it's true. You're like, I'll do it after work. Well, some people can do that, but if you want to do it consistently, do it before everything else happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love that. Especially if you're trying to create a new habit.
Yeah. And even you say, even writing your book, for example, right? You're doing that at 5:30 in the morning, because that's when, even if you're not working, it's still a time when you're not interrupted. There's always going to be, once everybody else wakes up, forget it. day's over.
That's the other thing. Once you have kids, like, you know, now my wife, she's like, you're crazy. Why do you get up so early? So now she gets up before I do, Christine. And that's her magic time. So she gets up, she meditates, for a short period. And then she's an architect. So she's able to concentrate. And then our boys are up at 7 o'clock and we have a little bit of family time before they go to school. And then now what's funny is that's when I work out because it's a habit for me. It's something I do every day. Yeah. You know, the hard thing for me isn't getting up and focus and working out. It's getting up and getting something done that I'm maybe not necessarily want to do. So my kind of reward is getting to go to the gym or go for a bike ride after I get my boys out the door. And then I kind of get to restart my day after that. So it's interesting how your routines change over time.
Well, it just sets a really nice foundation for the day as well. You know, when you do something really like that in the morning where you're setting the tone, you know, as opposed to like groggily hitting the snooze alarm 14 times and you're late and you're racing around, you know, I mean, it's just a terrible way to start the day.
Absolutely.
It's funny. I'm part of a mastermind group and, you know, people are like, oh, I just don't know how I can fit in this, that, or the other. And I'm just like, try just getting up just a half hour early. Just try getting up a little early, get up a half hour early, do that thing. And they're like, oh, it's impossible. But once they do it, they're hooked. They're like, oh, I just love that time.
I'll tell you what, I'll give your audience another gift here. So my coach, my personal coach, Craig Ballantyne, has a book called The Perfect Week Formula. And if you email me, chris@nextlevelincome.com, that's chris@nextlevelincome.com, I'll make sure you get a free copy of that. And he walks through, that's the exact formula that I use to change my habits, to write my book, to do all those things. So I'm just thinking about that as we have this conversation. So email me, I'll make sure Craig sends you a free copy of his book.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really generous. Yeah. So all these links are going to be on the show notes. So if you're driving, don't, you know, wrap your car around a tree. We got you covered.
And you can download my audiobook for free. So yeah, you can get that. You can get that too and keep driving. I love audiobooks. I listen to at least two a month. It's so much, it's so efficient.
Awesome. Awesome. So now let's talk about the writing of your book for a minute.
Sure.
When you know, it's obvious to me, and I think to everybody, why you would want to write a book, right? You're like, I have this wisdom, I want to share it. But what was the process like for you? Did you just like sit down and like channel it in like 24 hours or?
So yes and no. So first off, I'm an engineer like by education. So English was always my hardest subject. It was always a bit of a struggle to write. But I noticed that, you know, if you can become effective at communicating, and I was always reasonable at having, you know, verbal communication, but written is a lot more of a challenge. So as you're in business, you know, if you're early in your career and you're listening, if you can learn how to communicate better, go to Toastmasters. If you can learn how to write, even write things like emails, you know, that's going to be an important skill to have. So I worked on my writing for a long time. I even took a class in college. It was called, technical and professional writing, something along those lines, to help communicate, you know, some of these concepts that, you know, may be more complex. And then as I got into, you know, business and then ultimately led teams, and I was training, I would write kind of like newsletters, essentially, to my teams, to the people I was training, to help convey some of these ideas and those sorts of things. So when we started our real estate investment company, we were working with investors. But what I noticed, Christine, is I had a lot of people that would reach out to me and they would say, hey, Chris, I love this, but how did you start? Or what would you do if you're in my shoes? So I would have a phone call or I would write an email, and then a week or two would go by. And I'd have a similar phone call or write a similar email. And then a day or two would go by. And then I was doing this and I was taking the same email and I was just cutting and pasting it. So I thought, man, I need to curate this. So I started writing blog pieces. And my Caleb, my dear friend who also manages my marketing side and my website, said to me, he's like, Chris, you should write a book because you can take the book and turn it into these blog posts. And he's also the one that suggested the podcast. I thought the podcast would be good to curate this information. So then I thought, you know, I hung up the phone. I thought, I called him back. I said, well, if I'm going to write a book to have like, to create blog content, why don't I just, you know, write the concept of the book out and then I can just, you know, plug that in. So I wrote out the outline. I sent it to him the next week. And he's like, yeah, this all looks good. And, you know, I read a bunch of different books that were kind of, you know, some different things, some different people that had kind of tried to convey the same concepts that I was looking to see if, you know, the structure, you know, that I had in mind was there. And here's the thing. Once I had the structure, I said, all right, I did not focus on the outcome. I focused on the process. And every morning I would open up Word on my computer and I would have the title of the chapter I was going to write. And I would look at that before I'd leave my office in for the afternoon or the evening. And that's the first thing I was thinking of when I got up in the morning. Email wasn't open. Social media wasn't open. News wasn't open. I would get up. I'd have my coffee. I'd sit down at my desk and I would just sit there and I would try to write for 90 minutes. And it took me 2 weeks to write my book. So I found once you have that structure in place, because the knowledge was there. So if you have a book inside you, and by the way, everybody has a book inside them. If you're listening, you have a message, you have a story that you can convey. My second book here with my partners, it's Money Insights for Sales Professionals. And this is another one. I guess I'm giving out books left and right here. But this is, authored by my partners, Christian and Rod. I wrote the foreword here and contributed to it. It's a shorter book, but this is using a life insurance strategy and how to use it to fund real estate investments. And it's written specifically for sales professionals. But again, if you have a concept, if you can outline it, you know, then just putting the time in to do that, you can actually hire somebody to edit it all for you to do it. I would have done it totally differently if I had to do it again. But yeah, it was, once I knew what was there, the knowledge just kind of poured out. And it probably took me 2 months to edit, you know, it took me 2 weeks to write it, but it took us about 2 months to edit, add the pictures and get everything in there after that.
Yeah. The editing was, I found also to be the hardest part because I just kept, I'm sure, micromanaging and overthinking. And then I gave it to a friend to edit and he had all kinds of suggestions. And then I gave it to someone who knows nothing about real estate to read. And she misunderstood some things. So I realized I was falling under the curse of knowledge. So I said, okay, yeah, I can see how that could have happened, and rewrote those sections. So, you know, you could easily spend the rest of your life writing the same book. So that's
just get it out. Yeah. You don't have to go. I got a couple typos in there. You can see if you can find them and send them to me, and they still drive me crazy. But because I literally read my book like 100 times. I was like, how do I miss a typo? How's that possible?
How is it possible? I know.
Yeah. So you gotta like read it backwards. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. But it's fun. You think you're going to write another one?
I'm working on another book. Yeah. Right now as well. So a little bit bigger concept, kind of putting everything together. We're about to launch our online coaching course. So, and the coaching course is designed to really teach people how to learn how to invest in syndications, you know, how to vet syndicators, then ultimately put a plan together. So Next Level Income, which we haven't really talked about, the strategy is how to make more money, keep more money, and then ultimately grow your money. So we're going to have a step-by-step strategy to allow you to work through that process yourself. And this isn't the Dave Ramsey strategy of how to become financially independent. This isn't, hey, invest in your 401k, your retirement plan until you're 65. You know, and then hope your money doesn't run out before you die, or hope you die before your money runs out. That's like so bad. Right. You know, let's develop some income, passive income, so you can have true independence and really live your true purpose in life.
Well, and live as long as you like, right? I mean, this whole idea that, you know, oh, you can, you know, here you've got enough money to live to 85. Like, well, geez, you know, I was kind of thinking of living till 90. I'm sorry. That's just not going to work out.
Yeah. How about 125? That's exactly. A better number. Yeah.
I mean, my aunt lived to 105 and she's kind of my role model. So I tell anybody who's like, well, you know, how long we have to plan for? 105. So it can't be, I've always said, you can't save up to be rich. You have to put your money to work. Right. Absolutely. Richest man in Babylon, put your money to work, send it off, you know, with a lunchbox and don't come back until you got something.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It. It's crazy. I know. My sister just told me, oh, I just paid my house off. And I thought, that's good. What are you going to say?
I think that paying your house, 401k, term life insurance, paying your house off, these are things that, you know, the poor and the middle class do, as Rich Dad would say. I had a conversation with an investor about a month ago, and he said, Chris, because I'm also a licensed life insurance agent, he said, Chris, I want to hear your side of this. He goes, my investment club says you should buy term and invest the difference. I said, all right, how many people in your investment club are worth eight figures? He said, none. I said, how many in your investment club? Not worth eight figures, but they're just financially independent. Well, none yet. I said, okay. I'm like, these are the people you're taking advice from. I said, so when you talk about these concepts, you have to realize that that's what you're going to get. I mentioned DJ Van Curren. We were talking about real estate cycles here. Okay. So it's April 19th is the day the podcast released. DJ works with families that have family offices, $250 million or more. The Marriott family is one of his clients. Okay. Now, if you want to learn how to be rich, that is the type of person you want to listen to. And they don't talk about 401ks. They don't talk about term life insurance. They don't talk about paying their homes off. That's a little sneak preview there. They do things the total opposite of that. So, you know, that's a much more enriching way of life. And it also, you know, this concept of retirement is, it's like driving into a wall. You know, it's like, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to limit yourself in that way and come to such an abrupt stop when, you know, the world, the possibilities that you have when you do it another way, are so much more fulfilling and also stimulating from a mental perspective.
It's so true. This idea, what is retirement, right? Retirement is just, to me, just means I don't need to do what someone else tells me, which is the same as being self-employed, right?
Yeah, it's a weird concept that really should be, it should have been left in the 19th century, in my opinion. You know, so, you know, a lot of people today, they're like, oh, I don't want to live under the social norms of the 19th century, but they're living under the financial norms of the 19th century. Think about that. Look in the mirror and say, why am I, if I don't accept the social norms of the 19th century, why the financial norms? It doesn't make any sense at all.
We're not going to be getting a pension, and we're not going to be, you know, I mean, you're on your own here. So you'd be lucky to get Social Security. Not that you can live on that, but.
Yeah, I'm not, I mean, no, yeah. I wouldn't count on Social Security. No way. Yeah,
I wouldn't count on it. You know, if that's your whole plan for retirement.
Well, and also, you know, here's the other thing. If you're, all right, so some people are going to be listening. They're going to be like, this guy's maybe crazy, but think about this. If you're putting money into a 401k, let's see, I'm going to ask you a question, Christine. If you invest, if your tax rate's 30% and you invest and you earn 10%, are you better off putting your money in a tax deferred plan and paying tax in the future? Or are you better paying tax today at 30%, letting your money grow at 10% and not paying tax in the future? What scenario gives you more money?
Well, see, I mean, to me, it's when I heard like Roth IRA, I'm like, wait a minute. So I put my money in, right? And then I never have to pay taxes on it the rest of my life. That's pretty good, because it's the same thing. It's the same concept that you are going to be making less when you're retired. Well, what if I don't want to make less when I retire?
I love it. And that's, you just answered the question without answering it. So the answer is, unless the tax rate is lower in the future, it doesn't matter. Exactly. So a Roth IRA. Well,
but it does matter. Yeah. It matters a lot, right? You want to pay it now.
You want to pay it now. So basically, if you're putting money into a tax deferred plan, you are betting that you're going to pay less tax in the future. And I don't know, raise your hand if you're listening, if you think taxes are going down in the future. I don't think so. I'll take the other side of that bet all day long. Yeah. So you're either saying, hey, I'm going to make less money, or I'm going to pay less tax. And I think taxes are going up and I want to make more money in the future. So I'm not a huge fan of qualified retirement plans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so funny. But who are we listening to, right? The people who we're listening to, like, you want to say to your financial advisor, how much money do you actually have? Like, what are you worth? You're giving me advice. You know, what's your income? What's your, you know, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
But
yeah, I think that's, hey, look, so if I want to go, have a cycling coach, right? My cycling coach I used to work with, I work with two different cycling coaches. They were both national champions. Okay. These guys probably are, you know, they're either talented or disciplined or know what to do or both. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I want success. If I want to go to the gym, are you going to work with a fat personal trainer that's going to help you lose weight and get in shape? You know, same thing. Like you want to work with a financial advisor. And that's a very reasonable question. Are you financially independent? Or how many of your clients have you helped to become financially independent? And what have you done? If they haven't, then you have to ask yourself, is this, and look, I have an MBA in portfolio management. I almost became a financial advisor. I learned a lot about the industry. So you have to understand how the industry works, how they're incentivized to do that. And look, I get paid to put together the real estate projects that we do. Okay. but my investors understand how I get paid, and we get paid last. Your financial advisor gets paid first, whether you make money or not.
Exactly.
So yeah. So it's very important to know those things. And again, I think, you know, maybe I'm biased, but you know, I would much rather learn from people that, you know, have more wealth than I do than less wealth.
Exactly. You don't want to be educating your financial advisor. No. So Chris, I'm sorry, because we've had this huge departure and we've got onto like a conversation, like we're just sitting over coffee and we haven't talked at all about your book. So we're running out of time now. Could just tell us about it. Tell us about your next level philosophy.
Yeah. So again, you know, I thought about, okay, how do I convey this concept? And you know, my boys are now 10 and 12 and I've been trying to teach them these concepts. And my uncle said to me one time, he's like, explain to me like I'm a 4-year-old, you know? And I was like, yeah, like that's a good, if you can explain to a 4-year-old or a fourth grader, like how something works, then that's, you know, then you probably have a pretty good understanding of it. So, you know, I said, all right, like what's a really easy way to convey, you know, how I think about things. And first step is make more money. Second step is keep more money. And the third step is grow your money. So next level income, it talks about how number one, you need to maximize the amount of income that you are either earning as a W-2 employee or as a business owner. Figure out the ways how to do that. Number two, have proper tax strategies in place, insurance strategies. So you can't keep your money if you get sued and somebody takes it. You can't, there's no money for you to make if you die and you don't have proper life insurance for that to go into your family, right? Then it's time for you to look and grow your money. And when I talk about growing your money, I talk about finding income producing investments that are going to replace your active income with passive income. So my book walks through the overall strategy, Christine. And then I also talk about, you know, how we built the multifamily or apartment value add strategy that we implemented over the past 10 years in our investments. And then ultimately how we applied that, you know, to all the other things that we do. So, talks a little bit about my story that I've shared today. And it goes through all those things. And again, if you want a copy of it, nextlevelincome.com, just click on the book link, put your address in, I'll send you a copy.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Chris. So if somebody was going to do one thing today, like this afternoon, they're like, I'm going to take action so that I don't lose this momentum. What one thing do you think that they should be doing right away? That's going to like, kind of, I mean, obviously people can be in many different places, but let's say this person is sort of like working for the man and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, and they really want to be an entrepreneur. What one action do you think they should take to get in the right direction?
Yeah. So if you're listening to me, I don't know what you need to be doing next. Cause like, you know, we haven't had a conversation, but you do. So when you turn the podcast off, you need to write down that one thing that you know that you've been procrastinating on that you need to do next. And then what you need to do is what Christine said, get up 15 minutes earlier tomorrow and do that thing. Maybe it's 30 minutes earlier tomorrow, but write that one thing down that you know is going to help move you towards that ultimate vision that you have. And then tomorrow, get up first thing and do that. If you don't know, if you're like, wow, I really don't know what I want my life to look like, what I want to do, get up tomorrow and start writing your 3-year vision.
That's brilliant. I love that answer. That's a fantastic answer, Chris. That's a really good answer. So what do you wish I would have asked you? What have you not shared that what did we not touch on? I know we went like over the moon and back. So tell me what you'd like to share with everybody.
I feel like we've hit on a lot of things. You know, we shared a couple of books here that, you know, I'm happy to pass out. But the last thing is, I'll kind of take this a little bit full circle. We talked about real estate cycles. So, you know, wherever you are, understand that, especially when it comes to real estate goes in cycles. You have to appreciate where we are, that one strategy that may work today or work 10 years ago, you know, might not work tomorrow. And be open to getting help, getting advice, working with people that can help you learn how to be a Swiss Army knife instead of just, you know, having one strategy that's going to work. And love to learn. Just continually learn, you know, expose yourself to people that are smarter than you, more experienced than you, and also give back. Try to help people, because it is amazing how much I learned from my coaching clients and the people, you know, even my kids. So I think that's the
excellent
best
advice. You said something earlier on that I didn't jump on and I should have, but So you were just talking about, you know, your 15 years that it took you to learn these things. And I want to just say that people, I've actually heard people say, I can't afford a coach. Man, you cannot afford not to have a coach. Like, you, can you really afford to spend 15 years like figuring out how to do this? Why would you do that? Right.
So I had my monthly one. I do two monthly calls a month. Does that sound ridiculous to say that? But I have, we have a mastermind call and then we have an expert call. Okay. So we had a call last night and, you know, I let people share their wins. So one of my newer coaching clients came on, he just got a promotion. Okay. He's going to make almost twice this year what he made, like in the next year as he made in the past year. And he said, hey, I've been working with Chris for six weeks. He's like, I've already, you know, made back a multiple in that. We helped him with his negotiation, different things. And actually what's interesting is I tell my coaching clients, Christine, if I don't make you back, it's a 3-month minimum to work with me. I say, if I don't make you back your investment, I'll refund it 100%. And I've never done that. And, you know, I guarantee you every one of my coaching clients can say, hey, here's, you know, Chris has made this and this and this. And same thing, Mike, I have masterminds I'm a part of. I spend, let me think here for a second. I probably spend about $50,000 a year on coaching and masterminds in some way, shape or form, probably more than that. If I add in the personalized healthcare and different things that we do. And what I can tell you is every single one of those, even the worst coaching and masterminds I've been a part of, have paid me back a multiple of the investment.
Exactly. You're always going to take something away. And it also puts you in proximity of people who are succeeding, right? Even if, right. You know, even if the speaker's terrible, right? You sat next to somebody who gave you some fantastic advice, you know, something you heard, whatever. I mean, it's about, you know, a long time ago, I was going to take a class from Brian Tracy, a speaking class. Yeah. You might know that, you know, having been on a podcast with me, but it was Brian Tracy Speaker Academy and it was like $10,000. And I thought, oh my God, you know, I really can't afford to spend $10,000, you know, to just to learn how to speak when I'm not a speaker, you know? And when the guy called me to find out if I was interested, cause I just filled out a form and I didn't know how much it was. He said, he started talking about some of the people that would be there. And I had just heard like a week before, probably Charlie Tremendous Jones saying, you know, you're the sum total of the five people who you spend the most time with. And I thought, this is what I need in my life, is to spend time with people who are at a higher level. And yeah. I mean, that was a life changing. When I think of the trajectory that, you know, all the things that have happened because of that, it just blows your mind. You know, you just can't imagine. So yes, if anybody's thinking like, oh, I wonder if I can afford to have Chris coach me, like, dude or chicklet, grab the phone and get in the proximity of people who are where you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't have to be me. You're exactly right, Christine. You know, just surround yourself with those people. And it's harder as you become more successful. You have to continually strive to expand your peer group and do that. And sometimes you have, there are people, there are negative forces in your life that I talk about using kind of the circle strategy. So you write down on a sheet of paper, you know, who you want to spend more time with, and just spend more time with those people. And the people that you don't need to be around, you'll naturally spend less time with them. You don't have to cut people out. You don't have to ostracize people, but just focus on the people and the peer group that you want to spend time with. And that's really going to help pull your life in that direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chris, thank you so much for being here with us today. I really love talking with you. I had a great time.
It's been wonderful. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, Christine.
Oh, believe me, the pleasure was all mine. And thank you, listener, for listening. We've got tons of links. Chris is giving away a library. So I'm going to put all those links in the show notes and you must click them all and get all the free stuff because they're books that you're going to read and they're going to change your life.
Please do. Feel free to share them. And again, it's my pleasure to be able to share all the knowledge that we have out there.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Chris. And thank you, listener, for listening. I know you have a big choice of podcasts, so I'm very honored that you're here and honored that we are in 50 countries in the world. So that's just so amazing.
Congratulations.
That is amazing. Have a fantastic week and see you next week.